Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the pilot episode of our podcast, Gladiators of Knowledge. Here, we will be discussing about the most controversial battles fought throughout the history of our world. Joining me today are my two co-hosts, who, to my bad luck, will be with me for the entirety of the show, Anitesh Raghavan and Shreyas Vashish Chandramouli. Smile and wave, guys. Oh, wait, this is a podcast.
Hey guys, this is Anitesh. So a little backstory to all of you out there about the three of us. We have been friends for around 2 years. And I must confess, they're okay.
Enough with the sentimentality, Anitesh. Our fellow listeners are here for knowledge, not for emotional flashback.
By now you all must have guessed who that was. That was Shreyas. Yeah, I know. Lucky us.
All that aside, for our first episode, we will be talking about one of the most important events ever, the fall of Constantinople. Because you know what they say, it's best to start things off with a bang.
So this is how it goes. I mean, sort of a brief backstory, as it were, to the origins of Constantinople. Built in the 7th century BCE, the ancient city of Byzantium proved to be a valuable city for both the Greeks and the Romans, because it lay on the European side of the Strait of Bosphorus. The Emperor Constantine understood its strategic importance for his empire, and upon reuniting it in 324 CE, built his new capital there, Constantinople.
Sounds extremely fortified. Why exactly did the Ottomans ever lay siege on Constantinople?
That's a good question, Anitesh. Constantinople was at the blunted end of a wide peninsula that required defending on land from only one direction. This led the city prioritize bigger, better, and more walls because they were easier to defend and maintain in just the one direction. Their triple walls were only really breached by gunpowder weapons, which weren't really common in those days, and they threw off huge armies and dissuaded many other armies from even trying.
There's something you're forgetting, Vedan. The strategic importance involved in a river flowing through the strait provided water and a perfect harbor for ships. The harbor, aka the Golden Horn, was easily blocked off to enemies by raising a chain across the mouth of the river. It might not seem like much, but it stumped a lot of navies, for sure. Lastly, for military importance, the location of Constantinople ended up being mostly in the middle of the Byzantine Empire. This let the armies be centered in the capital and dispersed quickly to where they were needed. This was greatly aided by the fact that the waterways led straight into the Aegean, giving navy and transport ships quick access to the Mediterranean.
Constantinople was also a massive trade hub. The East was always far richer than the West in Roman times, and often provided more than their share of food as well. Such wealth flowed through Constantinople to such a degree that the Byzantine were often able to bribe barbarian tribes to leave Byzantine territory and raid elsewhere rather than risk a deadly war. The Silk Route ran through the city, and I think it was Constantinople that obtained stolen silkworms to make their own supply and get even richer.
Just as proof that Constantinople was really crazy important, the Ottoman Sultan, who finally conquered the city, immediately made it his new capital. The Ottomans were already an established empire. That would be like Napoleon moving his capital to somewhere in Germany, or Hitler moving his capital to Paris. It's really weird and doesn't usually happen. It would have been a huge logistical challenge. But Constantinople was such an impressive city that even after centuries of Byzantine decline and destructive siege, the Sultan didn't really wait long to proclaim it his new capital.
So, I'm sure that all of you out there now know the motive behind the Ottoman Empire's siege of Constantinople. However, what some of you probably aren't aware of is the fact that this wasn't the first, but the third attempt by the Ottomans, that is, to capture what was once regarded as the largest and richest urban center in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea during the late Eastern Roman Empire. So, guys, I'm pretty sure our listeners would want to know what differed between the third siege and the first and second sieges, or what key detail was different about the third siege on Constantinople?
Right. So, the first siege on Constantinople took place in 1411. This was caused due to a political feud within the royal family of the Ottoman Empire. You see, the king of the Ottoman Empire had recently died, and now it was time for one of his children to be the successor. But a problem arose when each of the four of his children wanted to be the successor. But one of them, Solomon, had the backing of the Byzantine Empire at the time and became the king of the Ottoman Empire and gave away a few territories in exchange for the emperor's support. As you can imagine, this did not sit well with his other siblings, but he did his best to vanquish the power. However, it turned out to be in vain because one of his siblings, Musa, proceeded to wage war against him and won. This battle ended with the capture and execution of Solomon in 1411. After this, Musa fought back against all who were aligned with his brother Solomon, including the Byzantine Emperor Manuel II, by laying an attack on Constantinople. This attack sadly proved to be Musa's downfall, as he was betrayed by his own brother Mehmed, who aided the.
The second siege attempt occurred in 1422. Because the Byzantine Emperor Manuel II's endeavors to meddle in the progression of the Ottoman sultans after the passing away of Mehmed I in 1421. This strategy of the Byzantines was frequently utilized effectively in debilitating their neighbors. Mihailoghu, one of the most significant frontier warlords of the Ottoman Empire, assaulted Constantinople, hence starting the second attack on the city. The vanguard under him attacked the city's rural areas before Murad, the ruler of the Ottoman Empire himself, showed up with the primary armed force and attacked the city decisively. However, Murad had to lift the attack because of the defiance of his sibling, Küçük Mustafa, in Anatolia. Notwithstanding the Byzantine triumph, the empire as of now had uncertainty been decreased to a couple of detached segments of land other than the city of Constantinople itself. It was additionally confronting a grave monetary issues and desperately needed loyal warriors.
Apparently, third time was the charm for the Ottoman Empire. The Ottomans were commanded by a 21-year-old Ottoman Sultan Mehmed II, the son of Mehmed I, remember him? And defeated an army commanded by the Byzantine Emperor Constantine IX. The conquest of Constantinople followed a 53-day siege started on the 1453. One of, if not the most important key to victory was the use of cannons by the Ottomans. In fact, this was the first ever recorded use of cannons, which helped break down the huge city walls, which were famed for being impenetrable. Furthermore, it was estimated that the troops manning the city walls were numbered just 5,000, and the city had only a few ships to defend from the sea. The Byzantine forces were outnumbered, outgunned, and even outshipped. This event marks the end of the Byzantine Empire, and thus came the end of the Roman Empire, which lasted nearly for 1,500 years.
Okay, so here's what I've noticed from the information that you guys have shared with me. Firstly, the proverb blood is thicker than water had a diametrically opposite meaning back in the 14th century.
You can say that again.
All jokes aside though, one thing that I was able to notice was that during the first two siege attempts by the Ottomans, there were disputes revolving around the throne of succession, which was something the Byzantines loved to exploit. This would often result in civil wars, which severely weakened the armed forces of the Ottomans during the first two attempts. However, no such event took place during the third siege attempt. Furthermore, Mehmed II had a devastatingly large army with much more gunpowder as well as cannons, which had proved to be the key factor in taking down the defensive walls of Constantinople.
I mean, every war has its repercussions. Would you guys mind elaborating on them for our listeners?
Absolutely, Shreyas. I'll be handling the economic side of things. There were many economic effects of the fall of Constantinople. Prior to the fall, the Byzantine economy had deteriorated, and the population of the city fell to as few as 50,000 inhabitants. After the capture of the city in 1453, and the security that came with it, economic activity revived in Constantinople and what were now Turkish possessions. The negative side of the impact was that the Black Sea trade crashed as the Ottoman Empire essentially started a monopoly for trade. The fall of Constantinople also severely hurt trades in the European region. The Ottoman conquest affected the highly lucrative Italian trade and gradually reduced trade bases in the region. The Ottoman realm and the portions of the Eastern Mediterranean Sea controlled by them prospered through the trade over long distances. The fall was economically beneficial to the Ottomans, but not to the former trade partners of the Byzantine Empire.
Impact on the empire itself was huge. The consequences of the fall of Constantinople were dreadful for the city's residents, who faced rape, slaughter, and slavery. The main social effect was the reduction of Greek Christian population to a secondary status within the Ottoman Empire. Many Christians were racked and degraded in the streets. The effect of this reduction is obvious even today in the hatred that Greeks have towards the Turks. The fall of Constantinople marked the shift of Christianity's control over the Turkish area and the beginning of Muslim rule. The most defining symbol of the change in religion was the Hagia Sophia, a church. The most defining symbol of the change in religion was the Hagia Sophia, a church which was changed into a mosque shortly after the fall under Sultan Mehmed II's orders. The fall and the establishment of the Ottoman Empire had considerable effect on the rest of Europe, which was mostly Christian. As the Ottomans extended their control northward towards the Balkans as far as Vienna, Austria, they were seen as a great threat to the Western Christian civilization by the Western Europeans. The political benefit of owning the city of Constantinople was crazy huge. It gave the empire access to go and conquer, and rule more lands from the base in Europe. The Ottoman Empire continued the conquest in Europe while spreading Islam and being prejudiced against Christianity. This action led to the hatred of Turks by most European countries till date. As a result, many historians suggest that the reason for Turkey's exclusion from the EU lies not within the modern age, but in 1453, when the fall of Constantinople made the Ottomans a great power.
The fall of Constantinople also had a significant impact on the Renaissance. The fall directly affected the start of the Renaissance. Many Greek scholars fled Constantinople before and after the fall of the city due to the Ottoman attacks. They fled to Italy, where they were welcomed and took with them many books and manuscripts written in Greek, which were translated into Latin, and the information they contained, much of which was from classical Greece, played an influential role in the intellectual life of the Renaissance. The influx of scholars and explorers from Greece, together with the economic monopoly on Mediterranean trade by the Ottomans, helped jumpstart the age of exploration where the New World was discovered. Even though the fall of Constantinople was viewed as a dark and terrible event, it led Europe out of a dark age and ushered them into the modern era.
Okay, so before we wrap things up, I would like to conduct a short true or false quiz on behalf of my team about the Byzantine Empire itself. Okay, so let's go to the first question without any further ado. It was always, okay, true or false, it was always called the Byzantine Empire. True or false? False, actually. The term Byzantine Empire came into common use during the 18th and 19th centuries, but it would have been completely alien to the empire's ancient inhabitants. For them, Byzantium was a continuation of the Roman Empire, which had merely moved its seat of power from Rome to a new eastern capital in Constantinople. Though largely Greek-speaking and Christian, the Byzantines called themselves Romaioi, or Romans, and they still subscribe to the Roman. They still subscribe to the Roman law and revealed in Roman culture and games. While Byzantine later developed a distinctive Greek influenced identity as the centuries wore on, it continued to cherish Roman roots until its fall, upon the conquering of Constantinople in 1453. The Turkish leader Mehmed II even claimed the title the Caesar of Rome. Okay, let's go to the second question. True or false, a riot by chariot racing hooligans nearly brought the empire to its knees.
Sounds false.
True or false? It's not actually true. Just as modern sport franchises have diehard fans, the Byzantine chariot racing had the Blues and the Greens, a pair of fanatical and often violent supporter groups named for the colors worn by their favorite teams. These ancient hooligans were sworn enemies. But in 532, discontent over taxation and the attempted execution of their two leaders saw them band together in a bloody insurrection known as the Nika riots. For several days, the Blues and Greens ran amok through the streets of Constantinople, burning buildings and even trying to crown a new ruler. Then Emperor Justinian nearly fled the capital, but was dissuaded by his wife Theodora, who convinced him that it was nobler to fight for its crown. Bolstered by her words, Justinian and his guards blocked the exits to the city, Hippodrome, which the rioters were using as their headquarters, and they ambushed it with a host of mercenary troops. The result was a wholesale slaughter. By the time the battle ended, the riot was crushed, and an estimated 30,000 people were dead, and as much as 10% of Constantinople's... 30,000 people were dead, as much as 10% of Constantinople's entire population. Moving on to the third question. The invention of poison gas helped bring about the empire's fall. True or false? We're talking about the Byzantine Empire, of course. Again, the invention of poison gas helped to bring about the empire's fall. The answer is false. I just gave it away there. Sorry. The Constantinople's towering city walls kept invading Goths, Persians, Russians, and the Arabs at bay for centuries. But they proved to be no match for the changing military times. In the spring of 1453, having already conquered most of the Byzantine frontier, Ottoman Turks under the Sultan Mehmed II laid siege on the capital with a collection of cannons specifically designed by a Hungarian engineer. At the center of the arsenal was a 27-foot gun, so heavy that a team of 60 oxen was required to transport it. After bombarding Constantinople's defenses for several weeks, the Ottomans blasted a breach in the walls on May the 29th, scoring scores of Islamic soldiers to pour into the city and put its inhabitants to the sword. Among the many killed was the last Byzantine emperor, Constantine XI, who supposedly stripped of his royal regalia and cried out, "The city is lost, but I live," before charging into battle with the fall of its once mighty capital. The Byzantine Empire crumbled after more than 1,100 years in existence.
Okay, so we have only provided you listeners with a very brief insight about the fall of Constantinople. For more information, visit impactoffalloftconstantinople.weebly.com and history.com.
We would like to express our gratitude to all of you who have decided to take some time out of your day and listen to our podcast. Sometimes we urge all of you, wonderful people, to stay at home and for the COVID-19 pandemic. In these trying times, we urge all of you, wonderful people, to stay at home to prevent a further spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. We recommend that you listen to more educational podcasts such as these to make the most of your home staycation.
Until next time,
we
gladiators of knowledge.
Take your leave.
Take your leave.